Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limar Technical Net. Every Sunday night around 8 o'clock, we get in front of our radios, and we talk to each other, and we chat with each other, and we teach each other, we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you would like to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to contact Paul, ask him a space or NASA-related question or an article that you saw that you'd like to hear referenced on a future technical net, you can reach him by email. His address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. As always, we offer a number of links available to interesting articles and YouTubes that I've seen over the last week. I cut and paste them, and I publish them, and they stay there for a long, long time. So if you have any need for reading material, you can pull it down and take a look at it. I found it interesting. I hope you will as well. Also, the first few articles linked is apropos to a short little conversation we'll have in a few minutes regarding artificial intelligence. It has to do with Elon Musk's plan to place a whole bunch of data centers in outer space. So take a look at it, if you will, and Paul and I will discuss the nuances of it in a few minutes. We usually have a chat bot. We have a chat room, but unfortunately, Chatsy is not doing very well, and they're not responding to my emails asking what the problem is, so I don't know exactly when we'll be able to solve the chat room problem. We offer an audio stream, as always, of the technical net, and because a few people asked me to, I keep it live the rest of the week. So it's a way, if you don't have a radio, but you do have internet access, to listen in to the Limark Glen Oaks repeater. What you do is you type into your browser URL technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you up an audio player that will play a stream from Glen Oaks. And also, I always like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. And it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who, unfortunately, have either moved out of the area or become silent keys over the years. So keep that in mind. Okay, let me drop for another second, and I will return and tell you what we got planned. Okay. Well, as I mentioned, we'll be talking a little bit about artificial intelligence, and I arranged with Paul to have a conversation about the alleged next move of Elon Musk to build thousands of data centers in orbit and apparently in deep space, and what we make of it and what you should kind of think about in terms of that. So, then we shall go to the usual main segment, the questions, topics, and comments. I'll ask people to hit the push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign, and whether it's science and technology or amateur radio related. And we'll put you on a little list, and we'll try to get to everyone tonight before we're done. Hopefully that should take us approximately to 10:15. Paul WS2N will join us with the SpaceNet report, and that should take us approximately to 11 p.m. when I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the game plan. Hopefully we'll be able to accomplish it, assuming that my shack works the way it's supposed to, the repeater works the way it's supposed to, and of course I work the way I'm supposed to, and I don't get kicked off of All Stars too many times. The average is usually one or two times a week, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, that's what we got planned. So I will drop for a second, and we'll get into my little AI spiel. Okay, well, a little controversy at the top of it. The EU and California have apparently launched investigations into Elon Musk's Grok AI. It has this unfortunate tendency to generate sexualized deepfakes, including of young children, which is problematic. And he's slowed it down a bit, but I don't think he's quite stopped it, so the EU and California is still looking into this. Recently, there was announced this, at the time, interesting story about agent, an AI agent called Cloudbot, that then had to change its name because of copyright infringement to Moldbot, which then had to change its name because of copyright infringement to OpenClaw. It was presented as an interesting AI agent that interfaced with web browsers and stored your keys to things, and unfortunately assumed that you know, you could give it the power to do things and not have it destroy you. You know, apparently a few people still haven't seen Terminator, and unfortunately it was mostly a scam. The story originally was presented as this was a place where AI agents actually got together in a chat room and talk to each other, and along with kind of using your credentials to get into all kinds of things. And it's been used repeatedly for people to steal from other people. So that didn't go well, and I think the use of OpenClaw is not going to go well. I don't expect it to survive past the next name change in the next week or two. So that was originally advertised as something called Moldbot, which was fascinating. They presented a complete fake story about how AIs were chatting with each other and scheming with each other and conniving with each other. I think most of that was nonsense. It was just an AI agent that had web browser access so that it could do all kinds of sneaky things if you gave it any access to anything you owned. Anyway, let's see. That's kind of the gist of it all. Let me drop for a sec. That's about the gist of it all. They're still playing musical bags of money. A couple of big companies are passing sacks of money around. Deals are kind of going a little bit pear-shaped, and finances are a little problematic right now. Oracle is kind of feeling the pain. You know, they're kind of getting squeezed. Microsoft lost a lot of stock value, but I don't think anything can kill Microsoft, at least for the foreseeable future. So the economy is not so good, and people promising all kinds of things from AI are getting quieter and quieter, and looking for those private shelters that they've built out of their billions of dollars to protect them when the rest of us come for them. So it'll be interesting. We'll see what happens next week. Never a dull moment. Let me drop for a second, and I want to bring up a artificial intelligence nearby subject. It's not AI specifically, but it's very, very important to AI. Let me drop. Okay, the subject for tonight, for a short discussion, is that Elon Musk has been doing some curious financial things. But the gist of it is he's announced his intent to put up data centers instead of planting them on the ground, where most of them, all of them are. He would like to launch them. He'd like to launch them in orbit. He'd like to launch them apparently in deep space, whatever that means. And of course, he's somewhat delusional about how many and how big they can get. He's talking about 100 gigawatt data stations, which are massive objects. You couldn't lift it with one rocket. You probably couldn't lift it with 100 rockets. You'd have to lift it in pieces and then assemble it in space, and I don't know how you do that. But nevertheless, he's kind of promoting this very weird idea. Sometimes it's thousands of data centers. Occasionally he reports, he discusses a million. So I don't think he's delusional, and I don't think he's stupid. What I tend to think is this started with X. X kind of ran out of money, and so AI bought X so that they wouldn't run out of money until XAI ran out of money, because it's losing $1 billion a month. So it joined with SpaceX for no apparent reason. You know, you kind of say, well, why should an artificial intelligence company be bought up by a rocket company? And so Elon's answer to everyone apparently is because this way SpaceX will be launching all of those data centers that I talked about into deep space. The problem is, again, that this is technologically not feasible. Let me call on Paul. Because he's our expert for space flights and satellites and such. Paul, you there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. WS1 is here. And I've read a little bit about it, but there's other companies involved trying to put up a massive amount of satellites. And when Elon talks about a million, I think it's like a kid, you know, you ask a kid, how many satellites do you want to put up there? Oh, let's put a million up there, you know. It's just a number, and I think the news media gets a hold of it. Because if you're going to put a million satellites into orbit, you know, you're going to have thousands of them everywhere you look on Earth looking up. The astronomy people will go completely bonkers if they do that, especially if they send them to a higher altitude, which they plan on doing. But, the infrastructure of putting gigawatt things, he thinks he's going to get all the power from the sun to power these things, where, you know, on Earth you're going to need a tremendous amount of power. I heard some estimates of doubling the power output that we have already in, you know, on Earth to power this whole AI system. You're going to do that all with the sun? I don't know. Anyway, I'm here to discuss it. Back to you, Brian.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I think it's kind of the I don't know if it's the United States or the whole world is something like one half of a terawatt. He's going to put up a significant amount of that. There's a bunch of problems as I see it. Now, number one is, there is no rocket known to man. Well, first, the satellites that everyone else is talking about are relatively small kind of relay station. They're not kind of designed to take up gigawatts of solar power and do, you know, billions of computations per second and send signals back. So we're talking about scaling these satellites probably by a factor of 1,000 or more. So that makes it incredibly much more difficult. It's not that much of a problem to launch a bunch of little relay satellites on one rocket. That's Starship's dream come true if it ever succeeds in doing that. But these things are massive. So there's no rocket available and none even in the design phase that would be able to launch one of these things. You would have to break it into little modules and then assemble thousands of these modules in space. And they've done some repairs with other smaller satellites. They're usually highly specialized design. So to just be able to roll out thousands of modules in space and align them and connect them and get them to run strikes me as kind of bizarre. What do you think?
Yeah, I've heard that he wants to, like, have some satellites receiving the data from Earth, other satellites transferring it over to this other gigantic satellite thing that you're talking about, and then other satellites transmitting the data down. It's going to have all these separate things. They're all not going to be the same. You know, different ones are going to serve different purposes, which makes the whole system even more complicated. Right now he's got 10,000 operating satellites right now. So it's 9,000 plus, they said. So let's call it 10,000 satellites that he's already launched for Starlink. And now he plans on multiplying that 6,000 times that amount or something to try to get up to a million satellites. You'd have to have, like, I would say 10,000 rockets to even get to that number. Now, that's if they just, like, relay satellites. If these things are massive things with, gigantic solar panels attached to them, a couple of ton satellites each, that's not going to happen anytime soon. I don't buy it. He's got a lot of work that he can't get a Starship flying in orbit yet, and he's already on this. So he's not focusing. He's all over the board with Grok and all these different projects he gets involved in. He's not sticking to one. Let me drop it. You got that. He's committing. He's looking to do up to 1 giga, one gig per second to do what he's presently doing. That's what he'd like to get to. So, to transfer even all the information. Say you got all the satellites up there. You have to transmit all this information up there. The 1 gig per second isn't going to work. Actually, Blue Origin has better satellites designed for that. They plan on launching 3,000 more LEO satellites into Earth orbit for their broadband system, and that's going to be like maybe a gig per second. He's got this other, and when I say Blue Origin has this other satellite system they plan on launching called TerraWave, and he wants to start launching those in 2 years. But TerraWave would be able to do six gig per second, I think it was. So, that sounds doable. If they take, if they take that approach for transmitting back up and down, but the building of these things, you'd have to come up with a design. You'd have to tell me, how big these things are going to be, volume wise, and how heavy they're going to be to launch them. We've launched 3-ton satellites to geosynchronous orbit, plenty of times. So that's doable, but if they're going to be more than that, then we don't have rockets big enough to do it.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, think of the ISS and kind of multiply it by 20. These things are, these are server farms. These are massive things. If you've seen them being built, they take massive amounts of land, and you're not going to be able to miniaturize them. They're the size that they need to be. I don't even understand how they're going to be continually powered, because there's no kind of orbit that he can place them in where they'll be pointing at the sun, 100% of the time. There's going to be off periods, and they won't be able to put batteries on it, because that will increase its weight and the number of things you got to ship up there. Also, so I mean, the 100% all times solar cells, plus the fact that a lot of people in the press are taking the price of solar cells that you buy to your roof. You can't use those in outer space. They have to be very specially designed and made of very esoteric materials. They can sometimes cost 1,000 times more expensive. Watt for watt, in comparison to the stuff that people put on their roof. So that price, I've seen some estimates where it would cost $1 billion just to pay for the solar cells for one of these contraptions. And it just strikes me as bizarre. And I think primarily what's going on in Elon's mind is he's looking for an excuse to explain that he merged XAI with SpaceX and not be able to tell people that he needed the money.
Katie Joams, eh?
Yes, Mike.
Okay. I'm going to comment, and we're talking about our good friend Elon. He's not one of my friends. Can you say Cybertruck?
Say again? Your audio got cut out in the middle of that.
Can you say the word Cybertruck?
Well, that's another fiasco. That's something that Elon thought was cool. And if it was 1980, it might have been cool. But it isn't 1980. Apparently, his brain got fixated on anywhere from 1960s popular science covers where that transport hyperloop was shown back in, again, in the 60s. And also the 80s, you know, he probably wants to build the RoboCops out of his humanoid robots and other such things. So, yeah, he's had a lot of really bad ideas. Usually the good ideas he's had are the ones he's stolen from people. He steals them from the best. You know, I mean, the Cybertruck is very reminiscent of 1980s science fiction cars.
And you said the right word. He steals from others. Like, again, I want to put my hat on again. Can you say Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla?
Well, they were both very, very different guys, and Tesla was a genius, a very erratic genius, in the end, quite apparently crazy. I think there was a news article about him. He had retired and was living in an apartment complex in New York, and he mentioned that his fiancée was a pigeon, so he had problems. Thomas Edison was a great businessman. He wasn't particularly the greatest scientist or tinkerer. He hired other people and figured out what would make him money, and he made a lot of money, and he did a lot of things. But a lot of people, unfortunately, think he invented the light bulb. He didn't invent the light bulb. The people that worked for him improved on the light bulb. So they're all kind of different creatures. But I was leaving the last problem as I saw this design for last, which is computers generate a lot of heat, and outer space, unfortunately, is not really cold. It's mostly vacuum, so temperature is semi-meaningless. So you have to get the heat out before you melt the chips in there, because you can't repair them because you have to go into space to get at them again. So the big problem, among other things that I mentioned tonight, is heat dissipation. That's very expensive and very technical and possible to fail repeatedly, and so that's another big flaw. He kind of thinks that you just kind of heat sink it to the outer shell of the satellite, and it just heat dissipates away, but that isn't how thermodynamics works. So, you know, that's another big thing, that this is a completely theoretically unpractical concept. Maybe in a couple of hundred years when we design anti-gravity devices or something, possibly, but the idea of lifting millions of modules and putting them together in outer space with automated robotic systems, it is not the 21st century. Maybe the 25th. Maybe Buck Rogers will do this. But this is all just a scheme to explain why he had to merge SpaceX with XAI. XAI loses $1 billion a month. X itself loses money every month. The only place that makes some money is SpaceX, and so this is his way of paying the bills for the time being. I doubt that he'll ever merge it with Tesla, because the Tesla people, they had a vote of whether Tesla should invest in XAI, and they voted no, but it was non-binding, so Elon simply had Tesla give XAI $2 billion. So, I don't know. I think it's a bit of subterfuge. I don't think he's quite that stupid. I think he's sly, devious, but not necessarily stupid. So, you know, if you ever read anything about these outer space data centers, file it away in your spam file, because it's not going to get to be anything. Any comments on what we say about heat dissipation, Paul?
Standard convection. You know, the only kind of system that they use to get rid of heat is radiation. You know, they have these panels like sticking out of the spacecraft, and you know, well, the International Space Station. They're massive panels that have ammonia flowing, and that's what's picking up the heat from inside the space station, and it's being radiated. You know, it's not a convection. There's no air to pull it away or wind. So that's, you know, you would need huge radiating panels to get rid of the heat. Now that's to keep it in orbit. I thought maybe he's thinking like the Dyson sphere, you know, idea. You know, take a bunch of these gigantic satellites and put them into the L1 location, Lagrange point 1, you know, 1 million miles away from Earth, the distance between here and the sun, and it can, you know, continually orbits the sun, but not really orbiting the Earth, you know, but it stays at that gravitational location. We have satellites out there now that do that. So you could, you know, maybe he's got it in his head, all right, you put this massive satellite in that location, and then you have these huge solar panels. By the way, yeah, you're right. They're all made out of like gallium arsenide, fancy solar panels in space. Very expensive, and even at that, they do wear out. I mean, the ones on the space station are constantly being affected, and they've lost power over the years, and that's why they're actually, over the last 8 years, they've been installing new solar panels in place of the ones that are there, because the old ones are degrading. And that's what you would have to do, you know, no matter where you put these things. But, okay, now, say these solar panels are out at L1, massive things facing the sun all the time, so now they're picking up electricity 24 hours a day. That would be fine, and then behind that, it's going to be very cold because, you know, on one side, it's going to be very hot, and on the other side, it's going to be, you know, minus 240 degrees, and that's what he would be looking at for. So then you could take these other radiating panels, like on the International Space Station with the expensive cooling loops made, you know, from ammonia. And maybe theoretically that could work. Maybe he's thinking that. But, you know, when you put two and two together, it really doesn't come out to four in this case. You're going to have a logistical and financial nightmare. It's not going to happen. Anyway, back to you, Eric.
AC2GS, yeah, I agree with you. It's not going to happen. But you can't really do a Dyson sphere that way because you could do a Dyson, well, it wouldn't be a Dyson point. Because it still has to be part of a three-body situation, so you have to have it aligned with the Earth as it orbits. You can't really just kind of spread it out around the sun and use the Earth as one of the anchor points of a Lagrange point. So again, and then you got problems with the farther away you go, the greater the latency. And I don't think people are going to prefer a server farm where you talk to your AI agent and it responds 5 or 10 minutes later, just because it takes a significant amount of time for electromagnetic waves to go back and forth between these deep space data centers. I don't know. I think it's just an excuse to move his money around without fessing up that he's moving his money around. But you know, there's a company that supposedly is interested in doing this, and I saw on YouTube, it was funny as hell. You know, it said the entire company had something like $20 million in money to play with, and 20, I think, 50 employees. Can you imagine? You know, they couldn't even get anything off the ground with that sort of number. But it'll be interesting to see how long he keeps pumping it in the press. You know, he likes to hype things. For a while, he was suggesting that his Roadster that he took down payments for but never released because he never made it would show up before the end of last year as a flying car. You know, that was also on the cover of Popular Science back in the 60s when I used to read it.
Okay. I just want to mention this other system that Blue Origin is really planning on putting up is they want to put up another 5,000 satellites, and that's going to be called the TerraWave system. And he wants to have them capable of transmitting 6 terabits per second. 6 terabits per second, you know, from Earth orbit down to Earth. What kind of a radio can transmit 6 terabits per second? Or I can't even think of something that's even... have you ever heard of anything like that? Getting up that high, the data rate that high? I mean...
Yeah.
That doesn't sound possible.
Yeah, you might be able to do it by multiplexing a number of... You wouldn't be using regular radio waves, certainly. It doesn't have the bandwidth. You have to be multiplexing either UV or X-rays, or some real high-frequency signal. So, yeah, probably the easiest way is to just multiply them and multiplex them. Because, you know, depending upon your budget, you can get a bunch of multiplex transmitters and receivers. But again, those are relays, and I hope that they accomplish what they're looking for, because they're trying to be a competitor for Elon's internet access, and you know, they're going to try and use it for internet access for the world, and also for wireless cellular communications without the need of using local cells, and that'll be fascinating. I was kind of interested recently. I don't want to bring up politics per se, but apparently Elon shut down his internet access for the Russians on the Ukraine border. I didn't think he was going to do that ever, but apparently he did, because the Russians are yelling and screaming about it.
So many things. And what about all these satellites into one another? I mean, China wants to put up 30,000 satellites for their broadband system. This TerraWave thing is going to be over 5,000. The LEO satellites is 3,600, you know, by Amazon. Elon's already got 10,000 up there. And, you know, it's going to create something called the Kessler syndrome. Kessler syndrome is where they start crashing into one another, and then they spread out and they start crashing into other ones, you know? And there goes your trillion-dollar system back to Europe.
Yeah, I think that's inevitable. You know, as long as everyone gets away with this, they'll just add more and more and more, and eventually it'll tip over. You know, what can you do? I don't know. It's satellite envy, unfortunately. And of course, Elon started it, and probably Elon will end it by trying to get away with a ridiculous number of very close satellites. But never a dull moment with these guys.
I agree. I don't get it, but you know, the governments around the country are allowing them to do it. The astronomers, forget it. I mean, whatever information that they got now, I think they're going to have to live with that. Unless they could put satellites on on a moon somewhere, on the opposite side of the moon, to have the communication satellites, and then have optical telescopes actually on the moon. You know, so you get your data and you transmit up to the satellite, transmits back to Earth. And, you know, that's going to be the only astronomy left, I think. You can't put up all these satellites. I mean, they're complaining as it is. There's one thing I read where if you look up, like right now, if you could see the satellites, you're looking at, no matter where you are on Earth, there's at least 30 satellites flying above your head. You know. And then what are we going to do? Why that? By a thousand. Wow. Anyway, back to you, Ryan.
Yeah, I feel terrible for the astronomers. They must be going through hell, and no one but astronomers care. And, you know, they try to do the job as best they can, and Elon probably lies when he says he's getting a darker black paint for the outside of his satellite, so it shouldn't reflect quite as much. But that reminds me of another make-believe story that Elon had about this whole deal, that he was hoping that eventually they would set up moon bases for industrial manufacture of the data centers. He believes that the moon's crust has enough raw materials, which I find hard to believe, because a lot of the things that go into a data center are somewhat esoteric elements that you can't find them, you know, sitting on the beach or something. But he had this fantasy that there would be moon stations just building more and more data centers and heaving them into deep space. So it just gets crazier and crazier.
It sounds like a lot of those, you know, far in the future sci-fi books I've read, you know, you know, from a thousand years from now. You know, these are the kinds of things that they do. And I believe he has read a lot of these weird science fiction books, and that's why he's named all his kids these different weird names from who knows what kind of movies or books that are out there. But if you read enough of that stuff and you start to believe it, you have, well, as much money as you want. He's got the richest guy around, from what I understand. So, you know, I guess he could dream up these bizarre things to do. But, you know, I'd like to see him stick to, you know, one thing, you know, keep off, you know, all these topics. Stick with building your rockets. You did okay with that. You know, get that straightened out. You know, leave the politics and some of these other bizarre ambitions, you know, to someone else. Back to you, Ron.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he has a fevered mind. He wants to do 5,000. He had probably attention deficit disorder, amongst other kinds of problems that he had. You know, the problem is not, I think that he doesn't actually read these books, or he reads the abridged version, or he has someone tell him what the story is, because he regularly screws these things up. When he came up with his AI and he told people that it was named Grok, they said, where the hell did that come from? And unlike what any decent science fiction fan, he told them that it came from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which it didn't. It was 20 years or 25 years earlier, Robert Heinlein's, the one where a Martian that was born on Mars, but they were part, his parents were Martian explorers, and they died, and the aliens taught him to survive, and then Earth found him and brought him back and Brave New Land or something. I forget the name of it, but it's a much older science fiction. And Grok was Martian for understanding the totality of something, you know, really being able to absorb it all and know it. So, you know, probably some other IT guy gave him the idea for Grok, and he got confused about the source material. Stranger in a Strange Land, that was the name of the Robert Heinlein book.
I haven't read that one yet. I'll put that on my must read list. Very good, Roy. I don't have anything else to add. You know, I mean, I've read a couple of stories about the total amount of satellites that are going to be going up there, but I really haven't read much about this gigantic data center that you're talking about. So, have you seen what he thinks he could be put up there, or is he, are you just going by what they have on Earth with the data centers here, and you're saying, well, they're going to have to transport these data centers, or, you know, build their own data systems as big as that, put this thing into space? That's what they're planning on doing. That they don't have rockets big enough to do that.
Yeah. He's talking about massive, gigawatt data centers. Those are those massive things that they're building, and then they're worrying about how they're going to supply the power to it. Yeah, the only way that anyone sane could think of doing it is building small pre-assembled modules. You just carry hundreds or maybe thousands or maybe tens of thousands of these interlocking modules and have them assembled in space. Otherwise, there's no method to place them on a rocket. They would think of putting 10 square blocks, city blocks, on the top of a rocket and trying to shoot it into orbit. You can't do it. So it would have to be a modular design. That mimics the functionality of the land-based data centers.
Okay, very good. It took, what about, let's see, from 1999 to 2000 and roughly 10, so a little over 10 years to build the International Space Station with roughly 35 trips by the space shuttle, and dozens more by the Russians and cargo vehicles, probably 100 or so, at least cargo vehicles to build that whole International Space Station. The space station weighs 1 million pounds. So, you're going to need like 10,000 rockets, I guess, to do this. Not going to happen. Anyway, well, his theory is he's going to make them so cheap that you're going to be able to just, launch them and bring them back and over and over again, similar to what he's doing with the Falcon 9. Thousands of rockets, thousands of launches. Well, good luck with that. I hope he's got a place, a big fuel farm to fill all these rockets to do this. I'm surprised he's got a supply of fuel now. All the liquid oxygen and liquid kerosene that he's using now for the Falcon rockets, plus the liquid methane that he's using for the Starships that he keeps blowing up. Well, the infrastructure alone to launch these rockets is enormous, for what he's planning on doing. Okay, we'll wait and see how far he gets. I'll if I see an article about it, I will keep reading about it. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate your assistance in this. I think one of the numbers he threw out was that he would have a rocket ship launching either every hour or every other hour for a year, and he thought he would have enough to put something together after that. But again, this is just the rambling dreams of a person who needs a nice long rest. Anyway, thanks, Paul. If anyone has any comment before we move to the main segment, please hit that push to talk.
I got to find out what one of these things are going to weigh. Just one of them, I'd like to know, because the space station, like I said, is 1 million pounds and 500 tons. So we'll have to find that out. Then we could really do the math on it, Roy.
Yeah, I'll investigate it. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a couple of orders of magnitude bigger than the ISS. Those things take up, you know, 10, 20 city blocks. You know, they're not small things. They're, you know, you can't kind of quietly put up a data center anymore. Anyway, once again, if anyone has any comments before we move on, of course, you know, a lot of times we do move on and then find ourselves back into talking about AI because it can be a fascinating subject. So we'll give you one more chance. If you got anything on this, if you want to comment, please feel free. Very well. On to the main segment of our technical net. If you have any questions or comments or topics of interest tonight, especially if they're amateur radio related. If not, if they're science and technology, we're more than happy to address them as best we can. So just hit that push to talk, give me your call sign and your first name, and whether it's amateur radio related or just general science and technology. Gosh, I hope I didn't tire everyone out early. Or I hope everyone isn't staring at the Super Bowl. If there's anyone out there with any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID. Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, I just have a question because you mentioned Tesla. You forgot to mention Marconi. and then he says he was genius. Yes, I believe he was genius. He was absolutely unique. And then you used the wording about inventor of light bulbs. There are two kinds for this guy. He was actually doing everything to he didn't invent light bulbs. He had workers who invent light bulbs. He just put his sign on it. But that was my few cents. Now, the question that I have for you is, why do you think that Tesla was a genius, actually?
Well, I mean, you know, no one knows what makes one man a genius and another a fool. You know, it's not exactly genetic. Albert Einstein, I believe he had two sons. One, unfortunately, was a schizophrenic. The other, I think, was, you know, he did reasonably well. He got a PhD, I think, in geology or something. But, you know, why is one person a genius and another person normal and another person not too clever? Intelligence, unfortunately or fortunately, is a emergent quality that's made from a whole bunch of separate variables that medical science and biology doesn't really know too much about. So, you know, what made him a I don't think it's all, you know, it's kind of like the ultimately you fall into the argument, is it nurture or is it nature? Is it genetics? I don't think it's 100% genetics. I think, unfortunately, the answer is as complicated as the question, that it's a function of both genetics of nature and also environment and what happened to you, nurture. So, you know, I mean, twins don't necessarily have the same intelligence. It's not very dissimilar, but you know, there's some inimitable quality beyond just simple gene sequences that seem to code for people of creative genius. So the short answer is I don't know, and the slightly longer version is I don't think anyone at this point knows.
Yeah. And the guy who came somewhere from Croatia in 1856, who didn't have much of education who made a revolution leading to Niagara Falls and sending energy from point A to point B using alternated current. The guy who started brilliant and then ended not so brilliant. Unbelievable. What I believe is, among ham radio operators or any other people, there are many people, they have a plentiful technique, but they don't use it. There are people who do not have simply money to patent something. And they go around that, seeing somebody years later patenting what they were to supposed to patent, but they didn't have money for it. Because cost of the patent, that's complicated. As paper clip is $30,000 right now. yeah. But I was amazed with the guy who didn't speak English. And all of a sudden, he learned English in 1856 in Croatia, in somewhere at the end of the world, we would say. He didn't have ability to learn too much. Of course, he went to Graz, to the University of Prague, and then he was studying in Austria, but I'm not sure where. But hey, we have alternating current, we have wireless communication, we have so many inventions, and we have a recognition that didn't give him so much. And then we could say, can genius be wrong? Yes. Tesla was against Einstein's theory of everything, and he didn't really understand quantum physics that was born at around that time. My back to you, Antoine Chiani.
Yeah, he was he had been trained in Newtonian physics, as most of the other people, including Einstein, and he was very resistant and argumentative. He didn't like Einstein at all. He didn't believe specifically in relativity. He believed that he had discovered particles that violate relativity by traveling at velocities faster than the speed of light in the vacuum. And, you know, being a very, very shy guy, was going to name them Teslaons or something similar. He was alluding to neutrinos, which travel close to the speed of light, but they certainly don't travel at the speed of light, and they don't travel faster than the speed of light, because neutrinos have a infinitesimally small mass, but they are not massless particles. But yeah, he didn't believe in quantum mechanics. He didn't believe in relativity. He believed in classical Newtonian physics because he was taught that. So, you know, even genius has their limitations. There were a lot of brilliant people who didn't believe in relativity either. The Lorentz transformations, which describe transforming things from one frame of reference into another frame of reference, that lead to the discussions about as you travel faster, your mass, your effective mass increases, and your length in relation to the velocity vector decreases, and you kind of widen out. Those are called Lorentz transformations. A brilliant mathematician by the name of Lorentz came up with them and promoted them, and Einstein used them, but Lorentz never believed in his application of his equations for relativity. So go figure. Some very brilliant people, some very famous for being brilliant people, often get things wrong. No one, to my knowledge, is infallible.
KG2RY, good evening.
Good evening, David.
Good evening, Roy. I hope you're having an excellent night so far. I am very interested in what you and Wesley are conversing about in terms of, like, genius. And I think genius or creative genius lives in a world mostly repetition, more of what you would expect, what is acceptable and what is not, according to rules. I don't know if they make too much sense. It's sort of like television, you know? You get basically what you expect.
Well, I mean, you get what you expect because that's what the business model requires. If you actually dig deeply, people expect certain things based on past experiences. If you take a common a plot device and you twist it, a lot of people get very upset. You know, if you have a battle between good and evil and you have the evil person win, a lot of people walk out of the movie or turn the TV set off and don't really feel good about it, unless you kind of use a little psychological gimmicks like anti-heroes and such to make you kind of appreciate the villain. You know, a straight, non-complicated villain who's just doing villainy, most people don't develop an emotional attachment to them and won't be... It won't enjoy an experience where at the end of the storytelling they weren't punished for their being evil. So, you know, it's what the world wants, and you know, like most things, it's driven on profit. So if you give people what they want, you make more profit than if you don't. And so that's, I think, the reason why, you know, stories and such and television certainly simply recycles the same garbage. And the people running it also feel very uncomfortable when the plot device is different than the average TV or movie. So that's unfortunately, people are very wary of losing money. They want to gain money. And so the safest, easiest way is to do, Terminator number 87. Because they like Terminator 1 and they really like Terminator 2, so... Maybe some people will still remember and give us money for Terminator 87 or RoboCop 43.
So you're saying that one criteria for genius is to fit into the scheme of things in terms of money, finance. You know, maybe that is more of what people expect.
So it depends. There are some genius artists who have never made money in their lifetime, did what they were compelled to do, and only in their death did they gain fame and not really fortune. But there's more than a few artists who died poor and became famous after their death.
You know, it's funny you say that. I was talking to a friend of mine. She was reading an article about the life of Michelangelo, who turned down being a painter of religious, political type scenes. And instead, he became a great sculptor, but he realized he had great talent in painting. And I guess, you know, he lived a long time, and he struggled, and his peers would abuse and kick him around. But, of course, what he left behind, his legacy...
Yeah? Did you drop out?
No, I stopped talking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think, among other things that I read, he kind of, he dawdled a lot. He kind of, again, I think he had a little attention deficit disorder. He kind of jumped from one job to another, and he didn't necessarily complete everything.
I didn't hear that from my friend. I guess he's very emotional, and he was competitive, And, you know, if somebody said something to him that he didn't like, it would stick with him forever.